Usually, a cybersecurity breach means loud alarms and broken digital windows. You expect, I don't know, malware that locks systems in an instant, a perimeter breached, and a response team rushing in.
Right, the digital equivalent of a smashed window.
Exactly. But what happens when the burglar is, like, already living in your attic? They're using your own front door, and the alarm just never makes a sound. Welcome to our deep dive.
I'm really glad we're doing this one. Our mission today is to unpack this fascinating stack of intelligence reports to really uncover the modern landscape of digital deception.
Yeah, and how threat actors are basically hiding in plain sight. We're looking at three distinct but deeply connected reports today.
We've got a high-profile corporate espionage case, a critical e-commerce vulnerability, and this really clever search engine manipulation campaign.
And that last one is targeting the exact people who try to stop these attacks, which is just wild.
It is. The overarching theme jumping out of all these sources today is deception through legitimacy. Attackers aren't trying to break the rules of the systems we use anymore. They are weaponizing the rules themselves.
Bravo.
We're seeing this landscape where the tools, the cloud services, and the search engines you trust every single day are, well, they're becoming the primary vectors of attack.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with a situation at a major global stock exchange.
Yeah, this one is unsettling.
According to a report from Symantec and Carbon Black's Threat Hunter team, an unknown attacker spent at least 5 months secretly reading the Outlook mailbox of a senior executive.
5 whole months.
My immediate question is, how do you sit inside a highly monitored financial network for 5 months without someone noticing the data leaving the building?
Well, you do it by blending into the background noise. Around October 10th, 2025, the attacker gained access and immediately escalated to system.
Which is the highest Windows privilege level, right?
Exactly. But rather than running some suspicious-looking executable, they masked their binaries. One faked the Adobe updater, and another masqueraded as Microsoft OneDrive.
Oh, wow. So security software just ignores those processes because it sees them operating legitimately, like thousands of times a day across the network.
Precisely. They basically put on a uniform to bypass the security guards.
Okay, but once they're inside, what is the actual goal? Because they didn't try to deploy ransomware or steal credit card data, did they?
No, not at all. Symantec's analysis of the command lines shows this was pure intelligence collection. I mean, think about the inbox of a stock exchange executive.
Right, that's got to be a goldmine.
It holds market-moving plans, non-public listing details, enforcement matters, unannounced deal terms.
So having quiet access just hands an attacker this detailed roadmap of global financial movements.
Yeah.
And they never even need to touch the broader business databases.
Yeah, and the way they extracted that intelligence is so clever. By November 12th, they deployed a custom tool built on Auspice.
Auspice. I think I've heard of that. It's a completely legitimate .NET library, right?
It is. Developers usually use it to manage file formats. But in this case, the attackers used it to interact with OST and PST files.
Oh, local email archives.
Exactly. OST and PST files are offline archives sitting right on the user's hard drive. By targeting those local files, the attacker totally avoids interacting with the central Exchange server.
Because interacting with the live server would generate logs and alerts.
Right. Yeah. But quietly copying local archive files on the endpoint? That doesn't make a sound.
Okay, but they still have to get those files out of the building.
Right.
And they didn't just, like, zip up a 50-gigabyte mailbox and send it over the wire, did they?
No, that would trip an alarm immediately. They sliced the exfiltration incredibly thin. They kept coming back every 2 to 4 weeks through February 17th, 2026.
Just grabbing the new emails since their last visit.
Yeah, thin slicing is how you defeat anomaly detection. Firewalls are looking for massive spikes in outbound data. Moving small batches over a long period makes the traffic volume look completely unremarkable.
And I was reading that they used a tool called Curl to push this data out to Dropbox and personal OneDrive accounts.
Yep, Curl is just a standard command line tool for network transfers. Very common.
But the really clever part is how they configured it for OneDrive. They didn't use the standard OneDrive.live.com web address, they connected directly to hard-coded Microsoft IP addresses. Why go through that extra step?
Ah, to bypass DNS monitoring, domain name system.
Okay, break that down for me.
Normally, when your computer reaches out to a website, it asks a DNS server to translate the web address into an IP address. Security teams monitor those DNS requests heavily to catch traffic going to bad servers.
I see.
By hard-coding the raw IP addresses of legitimate Microsoft servers into their script, they completely bypass that DNS lookup phase. The security tools just saw standard traffic flowing directly to Microsoft.
Which happens constantly in any enterprise. It's like a burglar not just breaking into your house, but living quietly in your attic for 5 months, making photocopies of your diary a few pages at a time, and then mailing them out using your own return address so the post office doesn't get suspicious.
That is a perfect analogy. And you know, what's fascinating here is there is no CVE attached to this story.
No common vulnerabilities and exposures number?
Right. There was no software flaw to be patched. It was pure behavioral masking. The burden of defense here completely shifts from patching to monitoring unusual behavioral patterns.
Like an executive's computer exporting mailbox data at 2 a.m.
Exactly. You can't patch your way out of this one.
So if attackers can cause that much damage without exploiting a specific software flaw, what happens when they actually do find a critical vulnerability inside a trusted platform?
It gets really bad really fast.
That brings us to a vulnerability recently added to CISA's known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. It's tracked as CVE-2026-45247.
Yeah, and this one carries a 9.8 out of 10 on the CVSS severity scale.
That is basically as high as it goes.
It is a critical, unauthenticated remote code execution flaw. That means anyone on the internet can exploit it without a password and just run arbitrary commands on the server.
And it affects the Mirzvit cache warmer, right?
Yeah.
Which is a popular extension used by over 6,000 Magento e-commerce stores. But wait, I have to push back on the irony here.
Go for it.
A cache warmer's literal only job is to preload website pages so the store runs faster and smoother for customers. So a tool meant to optimize performance is exactly the back door giving attackers full remote control of the server.
Yeah, the irony is thick. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it perfectly illustrates the strategy behind supply chain attacks.
How so?
Well, attackers aren't necessarily attacking the thick fortress walls of Magento directly. Magento has a massive internal security team auditing its core code.
Right, that's a hard target.
So instead, they look for the weakest link in a third-party extension created by a smaller developer team. If they compromise the extension, they instantly compromise the 6,000 storefronts that installed it.
So what's the actual flaw here? The Dutch security company SANSEC identified this as a PHP object injection vulnerability.
Yes. Attackers sent a storefront request with a crafted cache warmer cookie.
Okay.
And because PHP's native unserialized function reconstructs the object straight from the client without authentication, it just hands over the keys.
Could you break down the mechanics of that serialization process for us?
Sure. Think of serialization like packing complex, three-dimensional IKEA furniture into a flat box so it can be easily shipped across the internet. In this case, shipped as a browser cookie.
Okay, I can picture that.
When the server receives that box, it unserializes it. It reads the instructions to rebuild the furniture in its own memory. The vulnerability exists because the extension takes that flat-packed data directly from an untrusted user and runs the unserialized function completely blindly.
I get it. So the attacker hands the server a box labeled, you know, definitely a harmless performance cookie. But when the server follows the instructions to unpack it, the instructions actually say, execute system commands.
Precisely. They are invoking native PHP functions like system and current. They dictate the objects that PHP reconstructs, which gives them full command line access to the machine.
That is terrifying for an e-commerce site.
It is. They can alter databases, steal customer payment info, or just pivot further into the corporate network.
And the reports say these attacks are actively targeting gaming and business sites right now in the US, the UK, France, and Australia.
The urgency is extremely high. Federal civilian executive branch agencies have been ordered to apply fixes by June 6, 2026.
Which is literally just 2 days from today.
Yeah, time is running out. But the reports do offer a concrete tip for defenders. If you're auditing your logs, look for base64 encoded strings in the cookie value that start with T's, Q's, Z's, or YT.
Why those specific letters?
Base64 is just an encoding method that turns binary data into standard text. When you encode the standard prefixes of a PHP serialized object, like O colon for an object or a colon for an array.
The mathematical result in base64 always begins with those specific character combinations.
Exactly. Spotting those strings in your logs is a very strong indicator of an exploitation attempt.
Okay, so we've seen attackers hijack legitimate cloud traffic, and we've seen them hijack trusted server plugins. But what if they don't even need to touch your server? What if they just trick you into downloading the malware yourself by manipulating Google?
This is where the psychological manipulation gets really intense, because they are targeting a very specific demographic here.
Right. Checkpoint Research found a massive campaign where threat actors are impersonating popular open source and freeware security tools.
Tools like Ghidra, DNSpy, and Spiderfoot.
And these fake sites are ranking at the very top of Google search results. But why target the security community, the people who actually look for this stuff?
Because security analysts and developers are high-value targets. If you compromise a reverse engineer's workstation, you gain access to the tools, the credentials, and the internal networks of a security operations center.
So you could steal incident response playbooks or just blind the defenders before launching a bigger attack.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like looking at a perfectly real apple. When you hover over the download button on this fake site, the tooltip in your browser actually shows the legitimate GitHub URL.
It provides the ultimate false sense of security. You do your due diligence, you verify the destination link, and it checks out.
But the second you take a byte or click, a JavaScript trapdoor opens, and you fall into a traffic distribution system, or TDS.
And they use a CloudFront-hosted staging layer to intercept your request.
CloudFront being Amazon's massive content delivery network.
Right. By hosting there, their traffic looks like generic, trusted cloud traffic. Security teams can't just block CloudFront IPs, because doing so would literally break half the internet.
So you fall into this traffic distribution system. The way I picture it, a TDS is like a corrupt bouncer at a club.
I like that.
If you look like a cop, they hand you a brochure for legitimate business and send you away. But if you look like an easy mark, they pull you into the back room.
That is exactly how this TDS works. It rigorously gates the payloads. It checks your IP address. If it sees you're using a commercial VPN, or if you're coming from a known corporate data center, it assumes you're an analyst investigating the site.
It also filters out automated bots, right?
Yep. And it enforces what the report calls a first visit state.
Wait, what does that mean in practice? First visit state?
It means the system remembers you. If a security researcher gets suspicious and tries to visit the site a second time from the same IP address to gather evidence, the TDS recognizes them.
Oh, wow.
It acts totally innocent and just redirects the user to download the Opera browser, some benign extension. It hides the malware the moment it thinks it's being watched.
That is incredibly evasive.
And this raises an important question. How can we trust our own workflows? If you can't trust a Google search result and you can't trust the URL hovering over a button, what do you trust?
Especially when the payloads waiting in that back room are so devastating.
Right. If you actually make it through the TDS gating, you get hit with things like Session Gate, which is an evasive multi-stage loader.
And Remus Dealer.
Yes. Remus Dealer aggressively targets over 20 different web browsers. It specifically hunts for extensions tied to crypto wallets, two-factor authentication tools, and password managers.
It just harvests your entire digital identity.
In seconds. But perhaps the most insidious payload they drop is Animate Clipper, which is a specialized clipboard hijacker.
The mechanics of this one feel almost like a magic trick. How does Animate Clipper actually hijack blockchain transactions?
Well, blockchain wallet addresses are incredibly long strings of random characters,
yeah.
Right? Way too complex to memorize.
Right, you always just copy and paste them.
Exactly. You copy the recipient's address and paste it into the transfer field. Animate Clipper runs silently in the background, constantly monitoring your clipboard memory. The millisecond it detects a valid crypto address being copied, it intercepts the memory and swaps the data out for a wallet address controlled by the attacker.
So when you hit paste, you aren't pasting your friend's address.
No, you are pasting the attacker's address.
And because blockchain transactions are immutable, the moment you click send, those funds are gone.
Gone forever. Unless you meticulously verify all 30-plus characters of the address after pasting it, the theft is instantaneous.
You might just be a developer or a student looking to download a legitimate reverse engineering tool to learn. And the very first Google result is a sophisticated trap designed to drain your crypto wallet and steal your passwords.
It's a profound shift in adversarial tactics. They are leveraging your baseline level of trust against you.
So what does this all mean? We started by exploring how attackers lived quietly inside an executive's inbox for 5 months, disguising their data theft as standard Dropbox traffic.
Yep.
Then we examined how a simple caching plugin is functioning as an open door for remote server takeover. And finally, we uncovered how Google search results are being weaponized against security researchers themselves using a TDS.
The overarching lesson synthesizing all these reports is that the concept of a secure perimeter is dead.
It really is.
Deception is the new default. Whether it's an executive's inbox, an e-commerce server, or developer's Google search, Vigilance now requires verifying the behavior of systems and the authenticity of sources, rather than just relying on patches and firewalls.
It fundamentally changes how you have to interact with the digital world, which leaves you with a final, lingering question to ponder on your own.
Let's hear it.
If our own trusted tools, cloud services, and search behaviors are being this flawlessly weaponized against us, will we eventually need personal AI agents running continuous interference just to verify the digital authenticity of every single link we click? Or, when things get this complex, will human intuition and critical thinking always remain our absolute last line of defense?
Navigating that tension is definitely going to be the defining challenge for cybersecurity going forward.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious and always check your blind spots.